This Is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Most of us can remember a teacher or teachers who really made an impact on our lives. I remember my first grade teacher, Mrs. Zucchero, who was kind and gentle and had a different sounding name like mine. Or Mr. Curry, my English teacher in high school, who gave me my first lessons in public speaking. He told me, "You're supposed to be a little nervous before giving a talk." I wonder what tips he'd give me for talking on the radio. Today, Where We Live, we're focusing on an educator from Connecticut who's touched the lives of numerous students. Johanna Hayes teaches history at John F. Kennedy High School in Waterbury. This year, she's been named the National Teacher of the Year. You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I want to welcome Johanna Hayes to Where We Live.
Thank you. Good morning.
So first off, congratulations. It must have been a whirlwind these past few weeks after you were named National Teacher of the Year.
It still is. Thank you.
I first heard about you actually through a viral video on social media. I think you know what I'm talking about. But someone had created it of the moment a few weeks ago when you were honored at the White House. You had just given a speech about what it meant to be named National Teacher of the Year. And then there was this moment.
It is now my privilege to introduce to you the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
What was going through your mind at that moment?
The same thing that's happening right now. It just was so surreal. Right at that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm about to introduce the President. And I had known going in, we spoke briefly before we even went on the stage. But just at that moment, I was like, oh my God. Like, not only in my head, it's like really happening. I'm introducing the President. And for a history teacher, that's like, I don't know. It's just right at that moment, it's just surreal.
And that was about 3 weeks ago, is that right?
About, yeah.
So do you still wake up in the morning and go, oh my God, I met the President?
Yeah. Yeah, we just got, actually on Friday, I got the official photos from the White House. We got digital copies, and I'm looking through the photos, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was really me. I was really there. My whole family was really there, which was really cool.
When I saw that video, I got a little emotional watching it. Obviously, you're going through a lot of emotions when you're standing there introducing the President. Tell me, you know, at that moment, did you ever think, you know, you were a young girl from Connecticut, that one day you'd be a teacher being honored in this way?
No, this is not the life of a teacher. Like, the last 3 weeks, all these things are not generally things that happen in the life of a teacher. But to be at the White House, you know, I love history. I love the Constitution. I love the idea of democracy. So in that moment, to be in that room, you know, with the President of the United States, with the Secretary of Education, was just overwhelming for me. Like, again, we spoke briefly, but it wasn't, I had no idea that that would be my reaction when I was about to introduce the President.
Let's talk about how you got to that place. So you were actually named Connecticut State Teacher of the Year, is that right?
This has been a very long process, about a year in the making. Last year in May, actually on Wednesday, is the Waterbury ceremony. I was named the Teacher of the Year at my school, nominated by my peers. And then through an interview process, all the teachers from all the schools in my district, their names were entered, and then I was named the Waterbury Teacher of the Year. So last year in August, I think there's 167 districts in the state of Connecticut. All of those districts enter the names of their teacher into the state Teacher of the Year competition, and there's a series of essays that you have to answer as part of the application, and then I was named a semifinalist, which was such a rigorous process. You submit a portfolio, you go to the legislative office buildings and do an interview. I was then named a finalist. I think it was one of eight, and then it went down to one of four. They came out and did a site visit, spent several hours at my school. I think there's about 26 people on the panel. All came through my class, watched me teach, spoke to community members, parents. They probably did about 50 interviews between all of the people that came collectively, Board of Education members, community members, students, parents, and I was named Connecticut Teacher of the Year last year in October. in January, I found out I was a finalist for the National Teacher of the Year, and here I am. So a long time.
And before the show started, we were talking about, you know, if you had gotten used to talking to the media, and you actually were on the Ellen Show, too. So you went from, you know, meeting the President of the United States to being on the Ellen Show. It's been quite a whirlwind for you.
Definitely been a whirlwind. It's funny because the week before I was announced, I went to Washington kind of for some training to kind of, this is what it's going to happen. This is how the announcement is going to be. And they said, is there any media you'd like to speak to? And I said, Ellen. I said, I don't know if we can get Ellen. Is there anyone else? I was like, Ellen. That's just Ellen. And the announcement was made on Thursday on the CBS Morning Show. And on Friday when I went to school, the producers from the show actually called my school and left a message, which I thought was a joke because everyone knows how much I love Ellen. But it turns out that it was for real because I went on the show.
And tell me about the journey that your students have been going through this past year as they see, you know, someone that they that inspires them in this now national role.
Oh, my God. I told my students that, first of all, if I'm the National Teacher of the Year, then that makes them the National Students of the Year, you know, because they really have been 100% involved in this journey. And I think that's what really has kept me grounded because they own it. You know, every time I go back to the school, every time someone visits the school, they're so proud, you know, of who we are and what we represent. So they've never complained, which kind of makes me a little nervous because at some point I felt like this is so overwhelming and all-consuming. But they have just enjoyed it and are excited to read about themselves and, you know, all the work that they do to see it celebrated in such a public way. So my students are amazing again, the National Students of the Year.
Are they listening now or are they in class?
They better be in class.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. You're hearing Johanna Hayes. She's a history teacher at John F. Kennedy High School in Waterbury and the 2016 National Teacher of the Year. If you'd like to join the conversation, maybe you're a teacher or retired. What does it mean to have a teacher from Connecticut in this role? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Comment on our Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Johanna, I wanted to ask you about your upbringing in Connecticut. Tell me where you grew up, your family life, and how that impacted your decision to become a teacher.
Well, I grew up right in the city where I teach, in Waterbury. It's weird because all my education was in Connecticut. I went to high school, elementary school, right in the city where I teach. I grew up in one of the largest housing projects in the Waterbury area in Berkeley. And, you know, just saw a lot of things that kids shouldn't see, you know. And school, I did well in school. I always did well in school. So it was only natural that I spent a lot of time at school. I enjoyed it. You know, there were a lot of after-school programs back then, a lot of clubs, community organizations that I was active in and involved in. And I think it really has become a part of who I am because I relied on my community. You know, I was always involved in different things. And I always admired people who used education as a way to get ahead. You know, when I met the president, one of the first things I said to him was that I admired his mother, who herself had him when she was very young, went on to get her PhD. But I just imagine, you know, some of the bold choices that she made. It was a very different time, and she decided, you know, this is who I am, and this is the path I want to pursue, and she did it. You know, and I always admire people like that. So people have asked me, you know, when did you decide to become a teacher? I never really decided. I always knew. I think it's who I am. I always knew that I wanted to be a teacher. I always knew that school was a safe place for me, and I wanted to create that same type of environment for other kids. So there really is no, like, line of demarcation where I knew this is the event that made me decide I wanted to be a teacher. I think I was born. It sounds cliche, but I was born to be a teacher. It's who I am.
Yeah, I read that there was substance abuse in your family. You became a teenage mom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, oftentimes when we hear these backgrounds for particular students, you know, they may not succeed. So what was it about your path that led you, you know, to become a teacher and be an inspiration to your students?
Well, I think I'm very careful about, like, this was a very non-traditional path. It's not like I knew and I was steadfast right in high school. You know, there was a time where, you know, I just thought, you know, I'll work and make the best of my situation. And then I was in my 20s when I said, you know what, I have to at least try. This cannot be my real life. You know, so it's a series of choices, you know, and it's very difficult because, you know, when you're in it, growing up, I didn't realize how bad things really were because that's all I knew. It wasn't until I became an adult and, you know, saw things through a different lens and from a different perspective that I realized that, you know, wow, I'm lucky that I even, lucky, blessed, graced that I even made it out of this situation. Because when you're in it, when you're growing up, you know, that's all you see. That's all you know, you know. So I'm not really sure that I knew what to do at the time. You know, I just knew that I wanted something different. I knew that this is not where I wanted to live, you know, my whole life. This is not the place that I wanted to be. And I knew what I wanted. I wasn't sure how to get there, though. You know, I didn't know how to apply for college. I didn't know, you know, the resources that were available. And it wasn't until I was much older and able to find those things on my own.
That you were able to...
That I was able to even go on and register for school to pursue, you know, being a teacher, because I didn't know how to do it when I was 19, you know, right out of high school. I didn't know, you know, how to fill out the forms, how to apply for school, and there really wasn't anyone around me to give me that information.
I was reading the essay that you wrote when you were nominated for the National Teacher of the Year, and you wrote that there were teachers in your life that they saw the potential in you, and they knew that you know, that you had this potential, and that's what inspired you to not give up. Can you tell us about some of those teachers?
Yeah, well, it wasn't just one. There were several teachers. You know, I had a guidance counselor who would come to my house, actually, you know, after I had my daughter and say, you know, because I was a great student right up until the point where I wasn't, you know, right in high school. And I was, I guess, a little embarrassed, ashamed, and my attendance started to waver a little, and she would come to my house and say, you know, Johanna, you have one more year. What are you doing? You know, over and over she would come to my house. Even before her, teachers who, like, encouraged me to enter essay contests, or my third grade teacher, I talked about her at the Bushnell, who baked me a cake on my birthday. I did well in school. I enjoyed school, and I think that my teachers picked up on that and tried to keep me connected and engaged. And there were a series of people along the way. I just think back, and it's so interesting because it was never just one person. You know, I always had exactly what I needed at the time that I needed it, you know, and that came in a very patchwork sort of way, which is why part of my teaching style is engaging communities, you know, bringing everybody together, because it's never just one person that sees a student all the way through. It's almost like I got handed off from the counselor to the teacher to the librarian to... You know, so I always had strong, supportive people around me, but it was not always the same person.
Talk a little bit more about how those interactions when you were a student now impact how you interact with your students.
Oh, absolutely. I get it. I mean, I know that everybody has a gift. You know, everybody has something very valuable to give and add to this narrative. So it's not just the teacher in the classroom. You know, I remember when I was a student at Southern, you know, some of the most important people, there was a bus driver and one of the secretaries who really helped me along the way, you know. So I think about all of the people that are engaged in this educational journey for students just working together, you know, to make sure that they have everything that they need. And I'm very purposeful about including all of those people in the conversation. You know, this is how you can help me do my job. You know, and I think people want to help. They just don't know how.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. The National Teacher of the Year is in studio with me, Johanna Hayes, a history teacher at the John F. Kennedy High School in Waterbury. We got this email from a relative of one of your students. I wanted to read it. From Celia Smith. Mrs. Hayes is my niece's mentor, teacher, and friend, and I appreciate and thank God for her. When children can't talk to their parents, they can depend on Mrs. Hayes. I'm grateful for that. It takes a village to raise our children.
Yeah, I have a lot of kids who come talk to me. And it's weird because I almost feel like as a result of this National Teacher of the Year, and my essay. Everyone has read it. I feel like I've been publicly outed because it's not like I've ever led with my student. A lot of my students were very surprised even to hear, you know, some of the things that I've gone through, because I didn't ever want them to see that as an excuse or that, you know, I was giving them an out to say, well, my circumstances are so overwhelming. So, I mean, there have been points along the way where I've pulled students aside and shared some very personal things, but I kind of just, you know, pushed all of them, you know, to meet, to do their personal best. You know, I never, kids were saying to me, I didn't realize that this is where you grew up, or I didn't realize, you know, kind of doing the math after the fact that, you know, you had your daughter when you were young. And I says, because at this point it's not important to what I need for you to do. It's not that I didn't hide it. I just didn't want them to see, to use that. I mean, they saw the finished product, you know, or they saw the work that went in. But I wanted them, after, you know, they were confident in themselves, then I would share those things. But it wasn't like I ever led with that. So it's very weird now that, you know, the whole country has read my essay. I think when I was writing it, I didn't realize that this whole national competition was that public, or that this many people were going to be engaged, you know, in a dialogue surrounding education. I don't think I ever remember reading anyone else's essay. So I welcome it because I see all the conversations that have been started, you know, all the people who are saying, you know, this is also my story, you know, and it makes me feel good. But it's just weird.
I'm speaking with Johanna Hayes. I want to find out more about your teaching style in the classroom, but we're going to take a short break first. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. I'm talking with Johanna Hayes. She's been a teacher for 12 years, 10 of them at the John F. Kennedy High School in Waterbury, as a history teacher. This year, she's been named the National Teacher of the Year. Are you a teacher? What brought you to this career? What are the biggest rewards and biggest challenges in the classroom? Join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Johanna, earlier this month, you were honored again at the White House. I think actually it was in April, correct?
No, it was this month.
Okay. You were honored at the White House, and part of that speech, you talked about what it means to be the National Teacher of the Year. I want to listen to a clip of that speech.
Like every teacher, I started as a student. And like many students around the country, I know what it feels like to have a dream and to exist in an environment where nothing is expected to thrive. Schools where nothing is said or done to nurture or support a dream. I know what it feels like to struggle to find sunlight and constantly be met with concrete barriers. I see myself in every one of those students, and I carry my own experiences as a reminder that as a teacher, I have to be better.
That really struck me, and I see that you're getting a little teary. So I wanted to ask you about the concrete barriers and what you meant by that, and what similar barriers you see your students dealing with today.
I think that, I mean, we see it every day. You know, when we turn on the news, when we go to schools, you know, there are some schools in this country that we have to do a better job. You know, students are not receiving the best education. You know, and education needs to be equitable, no matter who you are or where you live or what you look like. Parents should trust that in this country, if they send their students to school, they're getting the best education that they can, you know, and that it breaks my heart to think that we even have to, you know, look from school to school and kind of evaluate them against each other to say, is one school better than another? Is a student receiving a really good education? Because everybody deserves that.
Yeah. I was talking with one of our education reporters here, and she had mentioned that, you know, the idea when we want to rank schools as some schools are failing and some are succeeding, but that label really takes away the hard work that's going on in those classrooms. Maybe there are some really dedicated teachers in that school that are dealing with enormous challenges, and they're putting their full, you know, passion into trying to reach their students. I mean, how do you feel as a teacher when you see those labels bandied about?
Absolutely. I think as teachers, we I mean, we're the adults. We deal with those things a little differently because we know what those numbers mean. But I think it's so demoralizing for the students who have given it their all and put in 100% of what they have, and they see their school ranked at the bottom of those lists, you know, based on their test scores. And what I remind my students is that, you know, look at where you were. You're so much better. You know, we have to look at students individually. If a student starts out in the 70th percentile and they're 75th percentile, maybe they're still only in the 75th percentile, but it's progress for them, you know. And I think that when we make those lists, they don't really show all of the other things that are going on, all of the other things that are happening, which is one of the reasons why I'm so excited about my students' role in this whole process. You know, because community service is a big part of what we do, but that's not something that's ranked on one of those lists. So for them to see that there is value in that, and, you know, and people around the country think that it's important, the work that they do, and even though it's not reflected in their test scores or in the ranking of our school, you know, it's important to who they are as global citizens. So it's not about the teachers. I think those lists do more to hurt students and families.
I wanted to go back to your essay where you wrote, you strive to meet students where they are and not dwell on where they should be. Can you talk about that philosophy?
I think it's kind of just what I said. Like, when they say to us, you know, our students should be 98% proficient, or, you know, if I have a student who's coming in below basic and I get them to basic, then they've done well, you know, and hopefully they'll continue to progress as they move on to the next year, to the next teacher. But if we say to a student coming in, and I understand what these numbers mean, I understand that there are benchmarks, there are certain academic standards that we have to meet, you know, in order to maintain a level of proficiency. However, if a student comes in, I get students in high school that are reading on a fifth and sixth grade level. If you tell that student right through the gate that you are underperforming and not where you should be, and therefore there's nothing I can do, you've lost them for the next 4 years. But if I continue to show them, okay, you started off the year at a sixth grade level, but now you're at a seventh grade, third month level, they see the progress and they feel good about themselves. You know, and in my mind, I know where I have to get them. But for them, I celebrate every milestone and not just wait until they're, you know, on a 10th grade level where they should be. You know, there's so much more buy-in from a student who's being celebrated and supported as opposed to you're not where you should be.
And what about how teachers are viewed? You know, you mentioned benchmarks, and there's this push to look at these standardized tests and then to evaluate teachers. I mean, what's a fair system so that we can see that, you know, that students are improving, that there is achievement there, but that teachers are also moving these students in the right direction? What's a fair system?
Oh, wow. If I knew the answer to that.
Well, now you're National Teacher of the Year.
Oh, wow. Well, I think that, you know, there's this common misperception that teachers don't like evaluation. And that's not accurate at all. I think teachers like feedback. I think that even good teachers don't want bad teachers in the classroom. You know, we want feedback. We want reflection. We want to enter into a dialogue with, you know, our evaluators, our administrators. However, I think where the problem comes in is where those conversations become punitive. If it's meant for growth or improvement or to affect student achievement, you know, this is what I saw in your class. Let's talk about how we can make it better. Let's share some of this information out. That's one thing. But when you come into a class and in a snapshot, you rank a teacher's teaching on what you saw in 5, 10, 15 minutes, that's, I think, the part that's unfair. So I think it needs to be a lot more reflective, a lot more ongoing, you know, where there's a dialogue that occurs and not just an administrator coming into a classroom of a teacher that he hasn't even had a conversation with, you know, or understand the dynamics of the class or what's going on and make a judgment in that moment that can in turn be punitive. I think that's where the problem occurs.
I'm speaking with Johanna Hayes. She's National Teacher of the Year. She's from Waterbury, Connecticut, a history teacher at John F. Kennedy High School. We have a couple comments coming in, one from Facebook from Marcia. She writes, my favorite part of Johanna being chosen is her push for her students to give back to the community. When I taught and retired 2 years, she's been teaching since 1971.
Wow.
Marcia's students often had difficulties in the school setting, but I encouraged them through different activities that we did, we could make a difference, that others had challenging lives too, and we could help. And that's something that you've embraced in your classroom, as you have said.
Absolutely. I think that for a student who is, every student wants to get an A, but sometimes it's more difficult for some students than others. So if you have a student who probably is not getting the highest grades or really is not celebrated in that way, to see them become leaders in their community. And also, I've said it before, you know, a lot of my students have been on the receiving end of aid for so long that, you know, there's a little bit of shame that comes with that when you have nothing to give. You know, you think about, you know, all the song, The Little Drummer Boy, you know, I have no gift to bring. You know, there's something that happens with that. You know, nobody wants to be the only person at the party who doesn't have a gift. So for my students, I tell them their gift is in their giving. It doesn't matter how much money you have or where you come from. And they actually see that because on many of the projects that we do in our communities, the homeowners come out or community members come out and they're, you know, thank you so much. We're so happy that you did this. And the students really feel good about themselves. You know, we did an Earth Day cleanup and it started to pour down raining. And the kids were like, I don't want to leave. We have to finish this. And I'm like, well, I guess I have to stay. You know, it's pouring down rainy, and we're still cleaning. We found a pile of tires. We're moving them out of this field. And the kids are like, no, we started it. We want to finish it. We want to see this neighborhood clean before we leave. So for them, their gift is in their giving.
I heard in that speech that President Obama gave earlier this month, he referenced a story of some students in your class who you noticed were not connecting, you were having a hard time reaching out to them. And you found out that there were 7 students in this class who had lost a parent?
Yes. Yes. That was the first year I got involved in Relay for Life. I couldn't believe the number of students in one group who had lost a parent. And this particular year, I had a girl who had lost her father. He was diagnosed in December, passed away in January. By October of that same year, her mother had stage 3 cancer, and she was just going through it. Her and her brother were going to be separated. They were going to live with family members, and all the kids were kind of rallying around her to support her, and they were like, we've been through this, Haley. We've done this before. And I was a little sad that as their teacher, I hadn't realized that so many of my students had lost a parent. But at the same time, I was like, this is our call to action. We have to do something. And the kids just really got involved and supported her through, but in a way really began to deal with their own healing because many of them, you know, had been several years since they lost their parent, but they had never really dealt with it in a grown-up way, you know, in an independent way. So we created this team. We raised thousands of dollars. We stayed at Relay for Life, and we've done it year after year. Many of those students now have their own teams. I see them when I go to register. So I'm very proud of that. Kennedy, our school has a huge presence at the Waterbury Relay for Life.
In this role as National Teacher of the Year, there's some issues that you hope to tackle and raise awareness. I wanted to play another bite from that speech at the White House.
My gosh, the speech is everywhere.
We are at a critical juncture. Many states are facing challenges attracting and retaining teachers, especially minority teachers. We must lead the charge and change the dialogue surrounding conversations about this profession.
How have you changed the dialogue? What are you doing in your district? I know there's some specific things to attract students to this profession.
Well, I think one of the biggest things that I've done is I created a program, a student internship, where I have students who are working alongside with teachers, almost as student teachers, to kind of see the other side of the profession, to figure out how their gifts can be used in the teaching profession. Because I think there's this common misconception that you have to be the top of your class and know everything about a particular subject in order to be a teacher. And I want students to know that, you know, if you're good at art, if you're good at music, you know, even if you had a learning disability, these are teachers that we need because there's somebody just like you who needs someone who understands, you know, what it feels like in order to connect. You have to see it to be it. So that student piece was big for me, just to attract more people, kind of infuse the pipeline. And then we've had a series of critical conversations in our district with community members, church organizations, teachers, to kind of see where those gaps are. Our percentage of minority teachers in Waterbury is low. It really could be higher. So we've really attempted to recruit and retain the teachers who are there. There are some specific challenges in Waterbury with, you know, some of our hiring practices that we had to, like, reevaluate and look at. So a lot of those things fell outside of, I secured a grant from the state. Initially, it was a $25,000 planning grant, but then it was seen as promising, and they awarded an additional $50,000. But even outside of the grant work, some of the district leadership has started to look at, you know, some of the different departments and say, okay, what can we do better? How can we, you know, change this? And then several mentor programs have been started, you know, with teachers to kind of support them through. So there's a lot more work that needs to be done, but I'm excited that at least we're identifying, you know, where those needs are and beginning to address them.
We just have a couple of minutes left. I wanted just to read this email from Chris. Johanna Hayes is one of the most humble and compassionate guests I've heard in a long, long time. Hooray for her and hooray for her fortunate students.
Well, thank you, Chris.
I wanted to ask you, we just have a short time, but you do have a family. They were there with you at the White House. What did they tell you when they saw their mom up there?
Wow. My daughter was sobbing, and she's not a crier. So that was that. I guess I'm just so grateful that, you know, that my family is able to share in this journey. We have to be very creative schedulers over the next year. I have a 7-year-old who is already tired of me traveling, you know. He's like, you're traveling again? But, I mean, my whole family has just stepped up. My husband, my daughter, you know, my mother, everyone. Like, what do we need to do? I didn't realize that National Teacher of the Year would include my whole family making all these different types of sacrifices. But it really reveals who we are, you know, as a family. You know, they said, you have to do this. You know, you've worked so hard. And there's something about your message that's resonating. And you have an obligation to share this. So my whole family kind of said, we'll do whatever we need to do in order for you to be able to do what you need to do. So that, for me, usually I'm the one who does everything. I'm the scheduler. I do everything. So for them to step up and now say, we support you, is... feel like I've done something right.
Johanna Hayes, 2016 National Teacher of the Year and educator from Waterbury who teaches history at John F. Kennedy High School. Johanna, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Next, we'll hear from high school students about who inspired them as they near graduation. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel, and this is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. School's almost out for the summer, and we wanted to check in with some high school seniors and their peers about graduation. Yesterday, Governor Dana Malloy and the Commissioner for the State Department of Education announced that graduation rates in Connecticut have reached record highs. Today, we thought we'd take some time to find out what's inspiring some of these students to stay in school and talk about what's in store for them next. In studio with me are three students from CPBN's Journalism and Media Academy, senior Adrian Sanchez and juniors Danny White Jr. and Sincere Preston. Welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you.
I'll start with Adrian. You're the senior in the room. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So how does it feel to be just, what, a few weeks away from graduation?
It hasn't hit me yet, you know. But I think, you know, once I'm walking up that stage and getting across and grabbing my diploma and shaking my principal's hand, it'll hit me.
You said it hasn't hit you yet. So are you telling me that you haven't had senioritis the past few months?
That's a lot. I've had senioritis all year long. So, but like the feeling of excitement, like it's just starting to get to me, you know, that tingling sensation in your chest.
So tell me how you're preparing for graduation. So what, you got final exams coming up?
I've been very, very busy. Just to prepare, I've had to take a break from all afternoon activities because I need to focus on trying to finish my classes on time, trying to get ready for my finals, trying to get all my college situation, you know, set, because I'll be going to UConn in the fall. So got big things planned ahead for me.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And what will you be studying?
So I'll be going into business, pre-business. I decided to do that because originally I wanted to do film and television production because of my background. But UConn doesn't offer a specific major in that. So I figured I could learn how to finance and market and possibly do film on the side as a separate activity and then hopefully turn that into a career and make a business out of it.
So also in studio with me are Danny White and Sincere Preston, both juniors at CPBN's Journalism and Media Academy. So how does it feel seeing classmates like Adrian about to graduate, and how do you feel about going into your senior year? I'll start with you, Danny.
I mean, you know, they were people. I knew Adrian last year. We used to sit at the same lunch table. We used to talk, and we were friends. So now it's going to be – it's a realization that, okay, you know, he's going to be gone next year, and then right after he leaves, we're up. Then it's going to be our turn to do what he's doing, and I'm just it's kind of so real, but at the same time, you know, the school year moved so fast that it was like I was a junior, like, I feel like 5 weeks ago, and now I'm soon to be a senior. So I feel like the year just kind of flew right past us.
They say time flies when you're having fun. Is that how you view school?
Yeah, I mean, our school was definitely fun. You know, all the kids, you know, we get along. We just try to have fun with each other, just try to vibe off of one another. And I feel like, you know, that's what our school's all about.
And Sincere, what about you? How do you feel when you see classmates like Adrian about to graduate?
Oh, boy. It's a slap in the face, like reality just hits you. I mean, I've been going to Journalism and Media Academy since I was a freshman, so watching all of the classes above me are gone, and now it's getting to me like, hey, it's almost your turn. And I feel like I've been waiting for this and waiting, and now that it's here, I'm like, wait, not yet, you know? I feel like I just got into high school, and now I'm getting ready to leave. Crazy.
Earlier, we spoke with Johanna Hayes. So she was named National Teacher of the Year, and she has been a teacher in the Waterbury Public Schools for some time. Students describe her as contagious. So she has such enthusiasm for being a teacher each and every day. And I wanted to find out from each of you, you know, what inspires you when you're in school, and who has been your mentor?
Well, I'd say my parents inspire me the most. They've always taught me school was the most important thing, so I've always had that in the back of my head, like, look, you have to get your education. And I've always loved school, I mean, since I was really young. I mean, I was good at it, you can say. I always got good grades, so it was just something that I just naturally just enjoyed. And then my teachers, I have great teachers, like my science teacher, my English teachers, and English is one of my strong points. So being good at English and then having a great teacher on top of it was just a motivational thing.
What about you, Danny? Who inspired you?
My parents definitely do that, because I feel like, well, not feel like, my parents told me that they had a good education. They went to college, they got their master's, and they did what they did, and they want me to achieve the same level of success but do better than what they did. They want me to keep going and keep, like, the family intact, and that's what I feel like they pushed me so hard. Because I've always wondered why my parents pushed me so hard to do good in school, and that's because they want me to better myself and make my life a little bit easier for when I step out into the real world. And the teachers, all my teachers that I have, I feel like they're all supportive of what we do, and if I ever need help or something, they're just somebody to talk to. They're there to just, you know, talk to me about it, and then at the same time, bring me back to school so that we can get the task we have that day accomplished.
You're sitting here with some of your peers. Do some of your classmates act as mentors for you and inspire you to be better?
Yeah, definitely. When you see your friends getting good grades on tests like that, and, you know, maybe you didn't get as high as them, you say next time, okay, now I'm going to pass them. I'm going to make sure I got a better grade than them. So we kind of, yeah, in a way, try to compete with grades, but it's all for fun, to just have fun in the end.
Who was your inspiration during your years of public school?
I think I'm going to have to agree with my colleagues here. I think my biggest inspiration is my mom, because seeing her wake up every day, and she's also going to school. She's going to school right now at CCC. She just finished her semester, but she's trying to do her bachelor's degree in nursing. And seeing her do that and go to class every day and always on task, she gets home, she's always studying, always doing something, and that's a huge wake up call for me, especially in my senior year, because I know that I'm going to be doing that next year. And just seeing my mom doing that is a reminder that I can also do that, and I have to do this for her.
So, Adrian, you were saying that obviously your mom has been a real inspiration to you. Any teachers that you can recall that made a difference in your school year and made you think that, wow, you know, college is attainable. I can do whatever my goals are. I can reach them.
That's a tough question because I've had a lot of teachers in the past. You know, all the teachers that I've had want to push you and want you to get there. However, though, I think my guidance counselor has been the one who's really, like, you know, pushed me for college and try to make sure that I'm on top of everything and getting my deadlines done and having everything on time is making sure that's important.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We're speaking to some high school juniors and seniors about graduation coming up and who inspires them. I wanted to ask each of you, you know, to answer this question honestly. You're all in places, it sounds like, where you have good support systems, you're doing well in school. What about your classmates who may be struggling? And how do you think adults, whether it's in school or out of school, can help other students succeed?
Well, I do have a few friends where school isn't really where they're good at, and I do my best to try to help them and try to push them and try to show them. And I think that I was always taught that you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped, but I feel like when a student sees a teacher genuinely putting their time into them and asking them if they want to stay after or asking them if they need extra help, it really gets the student to look at that teacher like, oh, well, this teacher cares, and it makes them want to do better. So I feel like that's what teachers can do to help them out.
What do you think, Danny?
I kind of agree with Sincere how, like, if the teacher can take time to get to know the student, then they can build, like, a whole nother level of trust and, like, a bond that they can have that maybe the teacher might push the student and the teacher the student will accept it and take it as a challenge and try to get it done, because sometimes, you know, we're all humans. Sometimes we just need somebody to talk to, and if we can feel like that teacher is who we can talk to, then we open up, and not just in that area, we open up in school, because now we realize that we do have somebody that cares about us and wants us to succeed in life.
And Adrian?
That's tough, because I like to surround myself with people who are on the same level as me, so I haven't really experienced that kind of situation. But I've had a close friend this past year who he's been struggling his senior year, and I've just been telling him to focus and just focus and focus and get rid of all the distractions and just come to school to learn. Don't come to school to fool around. Don't come to school to talk to anybody else. Come to school to learn. Just get your things done and get home, and that's it.
There are a lot of distractions. When I was in high school years ago, we didn't have our cell phones with us, with Twitter and mm-hmm. Facebook, and it just seemed like there are a lot of distractions in everyday life. It sounds like you were saying that it's important to just stay focused on your end goal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been a victim of distractions this entire year. I mean, it's senior year. This is like senioritis, you know. It's like on my phone all the time. And we're growing up in a generation where we're plugged into our technology. We're, you know, it sounds weird putting it like that, but it's really how it is, because when you don't have your cell phone, you feel empty sometimes, you know. It's interesting to see how we're so connected and how technology has such an impact on us.
Yeah.
Even our attention span has, like, lowered because of technology.
Mm-hmm. Sincere, I wanted to go back to you. You had said earlier when I asked, what's it like when you see classmates like Adrian about to graduate? You said it's kind of like a slap in the face. It's like a reality check.
Yes.
That, you know, high school, your career is before you once you graduate, and
yes.
All of your hopes and dreams and aspirations. What is your dream?
My dream is to become a well-known photographer or a psychologist. I'm kind of juggling between the two right now. Depending on where I get accepted, if I get accepted into a university that doesn't offer photography, I can still do that on the side. I can buy a camera. I can, you know, find things to do with that on the side, but psychology is where I'll reside. But if I get into like a more digital art school, then I'll stick with photography and then maybe later on in life pursue my psychology career.
And Danny, what's your dream?
Well, I'm initially I wanted to be a basketball player, professional basketball player, but sometimes you got to realize the reality of it. You know, it's like 1 in 16 million of a chance. So I wouldn't have a problem with maybe becoming a sports broadcaster like they do over in the big leagues. Like they have First Take with Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless, and they have their own show. And I feel like that would be a direction I'd like to go. Or I'd like to go study criminal justice and become a police officer, because my grandfather was one and he upheld the law and he was a well-respected man. And I felt like I want what he had in the sense of respect and in the sense of people knowing who he was and the authority that he had.
Yeah. And Adrian?
So I tell this to everyone. I just want to wake up happy with no worries about debt, no worries about money, and just live a successful life.
That's a good mantra.
Yeah.
So before you go, Adrian, we wanted to ask you, since you're a senior, any tips that you want to give Danny or Sincere about as they go towards their senior year?
Okay, yeah. First and foremost, friends that you have in high school aren't going to be your friends after high school. And let that sink in. Second, don't let anything distract you. And I mean anything, I'm talking out-of-school activities, after-school activities, in-school activities, friends. Don't let anything distract you from your end goal. And third is, this might sound hard, but be realistic, honestly. These colleges, tuition is just so high nowadays that, you know, kids lose weight because they don't eat lunch. They skip lunch, you know, at college because they don't want to pay for that. You know, so you never want to be stuck in a situation where you have to pay tens of thousands of dollars in debt, you know. Never want to be stuck in that situation. So be realistic and just go with what's best for you.
Thank you.
What do you think of that tip that Adrian gave, Danny?
I think that is smart. And like you said, be realistic. That is realistic. You know, a lot of the people that you have at high school in your life now, they're not going to be there outside when you get high school, when you get to college. And I think that the faster people realize that, then the faster that they can realize that sometimes their friends are just distractions too. So once they get rid of that, you start to see the grades increase.
Yeah. I think it's refreshing. Are you 18, Adrian?
Yeah, me too.
It's refreshing to hear an 18-year-old say, you know, to be realistic. We just did a show a couple of weeks ago about, is it possible to be young and debt-free? And we heard from some adults who are over $300,000 in debt because their the colleges that they chose to go to. Maybe they went for advanced degrees. And, you know, I mean, they were even saying that people need to really think about, just because you have this dream and you want to go to, like, the, you know, the perfect school,
right,
you know, sometimes the idea of what you can, you know, the kind of career you can have afterwards isn't going to help you pay all that debt off. And so you really got to think about it in that holistic way. So
exactly. It's a lot of planning.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I want to thank all of you for speaking with me. And congratulations first to Adrian Sanchez, soon to be graduating, a senior at CPBN's Journalism and Media Academy. Also, Danny White and Sincere Preston, juniors at CPBN's Journalism and Media Academy. Good luck as you look towards your senior year.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Our show is produced by Lydia Brown. Our technical producer today is Tucker Ives. WNPR's digital editor is Heather Brandon. And the executive producer is Katie Tolarski. You can continue the conversation on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Thanks for listening.